I know I feel better overall when I get outside and I get active. But when I don't have the right gear, especially when the weather is unpredictable this spring, it's harder to live that life that I really want. And that's why I'm sort of obsessed now with my Vessi shoes. I have two pairs, and I'm literally wearing at least one of them every day because Vessis are so comfortable, they're easy to get on and off when I'm on the go, and they are super stylish. I love how they look. Plus, get this, they're also 100% waterproof. And I really turn to my Stormburst high tops when I'm ready for a bit more adventuring out and about. They are so versatile, though. I can wear them for everyday errands and getting things done, or taking them into the elements, from beach days to walking around the city to a rainy day hike. Elevate your spring wardrobe with Vessi's Stormburst shoes. Discover more at vessi.com/newsworthy. Get your pair today to get an automatic 15% off your first purchase at checkout and be ready to step out in style, rain or shine. Trust me, you will not regret this. Go to vessi.com/newsworthy to get your new favorite shoes with an automatic 15% off your first purchase at checkout.
Today is Saturday, March 27th. Today, we're talking about what to expect in the high-profile and racially charged murder trial of Derek Chauvin. The trial begins this Monday. Remember, Chauvin, a former Minneapolis police officer who was white, is accused of killing George Floyd, who is black, on May 25th, 2020. A witness video, seen around the world now, appears to show Chauvin using his knee to pin Floyd down on the ground for several minutes, and Floyd is heard saying, "I can't breathe." The case sparked nationwide protests and unrest. And now the world will be watching as a jury hears this case and then decides whether Chauvin will be convicted and put in prison or acquitted and allowed to go free. Today, you'll hear from two guests. One is Dr. Sam Summers, a social psychologist who studies in part race, social perception, and their effect on the legal system. But first, criminal defense attorney Joe Tamburino joins us to discuss the key legal concepts and considerations in this case. He's a leading legal voice in Minneapolis, where this trial is happening. Neither is directly tied to the trial, but both have been watching it closely, and they offer their expert insights as this trial is about to unfold. Welcome, welcome to the Newsworthy Special Edition Saturday, when we sit down with a different expert or celebrity every Saturday to talk about something in the news. Don't forget to tune in every Monday through Friday for our regular episodes when we provide all the day's news in just 10 minutes. It's fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. It's time for today's special edition Saturday. You ready? Let's do this. Joe, thank you so much for coming on the Newsworthy.
Thank you very much for having me.
So we know the suspect in this case, Derek Chauvin, is facing three charges related to this one death. We've got second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and manslaughter. Can you briefly just explain what each one means in this case?
Sure. So second-degree murder has two different parts. You could either be charged with intentional murder, which Mr. Chauvin is not, or second-degree unintentional murder, which is also known as felony murder. Mr. Chauvin is charged with the latter. Second-degree unintentional felony murder. And what that means is the state is alleging that Mr. Chauvin committed a felony assault against Mr. Floyd, and as a result of that assault, Mr. Floyd died. The Minnesota guidelines sentence calls for 150 months. The next count, count two, is third-degree murder. Third-degree murder means that you did an act that was eminently dangerous to others and had a complete disregard for their safety and well-being. A third-degree murder does not require intent. It's a negligence crime. The recommended sentence, if he is convicted, is 150 months. Then the last count is what's called second-degree manslaughter. That's not a murder, obviously. And for that, again, it's a negligence crime. It just means you used extreme negligence. Less negligence than with third degree. You don't have to have a depraved mind or not care about anyone's safety. But it's still a negligence crime that what you did had a substantial causal factor in Mr. Floyd's death. The Minnesota guidelines calls for 48 months.
Explain to us what really needs to be proven throughout this trial for the outcome to be one way or the other.
So the first thing is the jury has to determine if the state proved these counts beyond a reasonable doubt. And then they also have to determine if the defense applies, meaning that, well, he did not, he being Mr. Chauvin, did not kill Mr. Floyd because he was acting with reasonable force. But before they even get to that, What the defense will argue, I'm sure, from the time that they give opening statements until the time that the jury gets this case, is cause of death. That's their strongest argument, that regardless of what Mr. Chauvin did, the actual cause of death was drug overdose, drug use, poor health, cardiac arrest, or one of the above or all of them.
And what role will that video that so many of us have seen already before the trial even begins, what role will that video play in this case?
Several things. First, the prosecution will want to use that in their opening statements. Second, they will want to use it in their case in chief and break it down with their expert witnesses. And lastly, they will use it in closing arguments in order to bring home their case by trying to show that Mr. Chauvin was the actual cause of death or a substantial causal factor.
And we already know that there's been a $27 million civil settlement made with Floyd's family. Will that come into play in the trial at all?
Hopefully not. The jury has, well, they've all been exposed to that, but they have said that they would put that aside and not let it seep into their deliberations. That was out of left field, that settlement. I can tell you that throughout Minnesota and Minneapolis history, when you have a criminal prosecution going on, civil settlements are almost always, I've been doing this since 1989. I cannot remember a civil settlement that was announced before the concomitant criminal trial. This settlement, however, was announced literally as the criminal jury was being picked at the 11th hour before the criminal trial starts. And that was highly unusual, highly prejudicial. So I don't know why they did that. It really upset the judge, and rightfully so. The judge took them to task. The judge made comments on the record, and hopefully it won't affect the case because everyone deserves a right to a fair trial.
Taking a step back, what are your thoughts on how these court proceedings have been going so far?
They've been going extremely well. Hats off to the system. The Hennepin County court system, they have done everything pursuant to COVID procedures. They've spent an enormous amount of money trying to make sure that everyone is safe coming to and from the courthouse, as well as once in the courthouse. The jury selection process was extremely fair. Think of it this way. Hennepin County has 1.2 million people. 74% of the people in Hennepin County are white. 13% are Black, African American. And this jury right now has, well, there are 15 jurors, but one juror will be excused on Monday. So there's 14 jurors really, and two are alternates. But even within that 14, six are people of color, four are Black. It is an extremely diverse jury. The judge gave both sides, the prosecutor and the defense, all the time they wanted to question this jury. Never once did you hear this judge say, hey, speed it along. You've already asked that. Let's move on. How long are you going to take? I've had over 100 jury trials in my career, and I would say 7 out of 10 times you will see a judge say at some point in jury selection, all right, come on, counsel, you've already asked that. Can we move on? I mean, these people need to go to lunch or something like that. Never once did this judge say that. So I think this process has been extremely fair.
How long do you think the actual trial will end up lasting? And do you think the verdict in this case will impact future cases like it?
I know that the system has allotted 4 or 5 weeks for this trial. I don't think it's going to be that long. I think this trial will take 3 weeks. What people forget sometimes is that once the train starts rolling in a trial, it goes full speed ahead. And unless something comes from left field again, like, you know, that city's announcement with the settlement, I don't think there's anything that's going to really be in the way of slowing down this trial. In terms of the verdict, absolutely. Regardless of what the verdict is, whether it's a conviction on all three, a conviction on one or two, or an acquittal, regardless of what the verdict is, it will have a huge impact. I don't know how this trial is going to turn out. I think the evidence is pretty strong for the state on many grounds, but this will be a very good window into a jury's mind as to the powerfulness of a video. And does that say everything that the case is about?
Still ahead, social psychologist Sam Summers shares a common misconception about jury selection, what his research has shown about diverse juries, and what role he thinks race will play in the courtroom.
But first, let's take a quick break to thank our sponsors. Today's episode is brought to you by Rothy's. If you have not tried Rothy's shoes yet, let me tell you, they're incredibly comfortable with zero break-in period. Apparently, it's thanks to their seamlessly knit-to-shape design, and whenever I find shoes that combine comfort and style, I'm sold. They even add in sustainability, so I can feel really good about buying from Rothy's. Yes, they've literally transformed tens of millions of bottles into beautiful shoes, handbags, and face masks. And Rothy's innovative manufacturing methods are also planet-friendly. Another major bonus, Rothy's are fully machine washable. Simply toss your shoes in the washing machine whenever they need a refresh. Plus, Rothy's has a bunch of chic styles to choose from. It's no surprise their best-selling shoe, the Point in Black, has more than 3,000 near-perfect reviews. And I give my Rothy's flats that I wear all the time 5 stars as well. So check out all the amazing shoes, bags, and masks available right now at rothys.com/newsworthy. That's rothys.com, rothys.com/newsworthy. Style and sustainability meet to create your new favorites. Head to rothys.com/newsworthy today. This episode is also brought to you by Ritual. We all deserve to know what we're putting in our bodies and why, especially when it's part of your daily routine. And that's why I appreciate Ritual's transparent approach. They have a one-of-a-kind visible supply chain so you always know what nutrients you're taking and where they came from. In fact, I first heard about Ritual vitamins from my doctor, and the more I looked into them, the more I became a fan. And now I've been taking them for months. I also appreciate that I don't feel like I have to hold my nose when taking these pills, and they've never upset my stomach. I can take them with or without food. Plus, with Ritual, I never worry about running out. Ritual multivitamins are delivered every month with free shipping always. And you can get your money back for your first order if you don't love Ritual within your first month. So get your key nutrients with Ritual. And right now, the Newsworthy listeners can get a discount. You can get 10% off during your first 3 months. Just visit ritual.com/newsworthy to start your Ritual today. That's ritual.com/newsworthy. Okay, now here's my conversation with our second expert guest. Dr. Sam Summers, thank you so much for coming on the Newsworthy.
Sure, thanks for having me.
So I want to briefly talk about what's already happened. The last 2 weeks have been jury selection. What had to be considered in that process? And what do you think the lawyers were looking for?
I think the general public thinks of jury selection as being all about trying to impanel an impartial jury. And certainly we want jurors to be impartial. And certainly that is the focus of the system, the legal system itself. But our U.S. legal system is an adversarial one in which the attorneys in question are trying to win their case. So those attorneys aren't seeking to find the most impartial jurors they can. They're looking to find jurors who they think are most likely to be sympathetic to their side of the case. So that tension, that dynamic is, I think, one of the main ones that people have been talking about over the last week or so with jury selection in this trial. How do you even think about impartiality in such a high-profile trial like this one? So there are a lot of challenging questions that arise from the jury selection here.
And I know you've specifically researched the impact of diverse juries. What does that research show? And what do you think is important for people to know about the jurors that were ultimately chosen in this case?
I think it's important for people to understand that, of course, we cannot predict how a jury is going to decide a case simply based on its demographics. But we do know certain things about the importance of a jury's composition. And we know that diverse juries or juries that are more representative of the communities from which they're drawn, we know that those types of juries inspire greater feelings of legitimacy about the system, about the legal system from the general public. We also know that just across the board, not just juries, diverse groups tend to be more wide-ranging and often more thoughtful and likely to consider a broad range of perspectives in making a decision than do more homogeneous groups. And certainly when it comes to juries, we'd like our juries to do those things, to consider a broad range of perspectives and issues. And so there are some actual effects of a jury's diversity on its performance as well, overall, again, in the aggregate. It's really hard to predict what one specific jury is going to do.
Obviously, this is a national, even international story with a lot of video that goes along with it that most of us have seen. And I'm sure at least most of the jurors are no different in that. So how are these jurors going to separate that previous knowledge and maybe the emotion or opinions that can go along with that to ultimately reach what will be considered a fair verdict?
Yeah, that was one of the major issues discussed during the jury selection process, right? You had prospective jurors saying things like, I watched that video and I found it so upsetting. I couldn't watch it in its entirety. And I mean, who wouldn't find that video disturbing? But yes, these jurors are going to be asked to make decisions based on evidence and based on the facts in the case and the law as instructed to them by the judge. It is a balancing act. I mean, on the one hand, that's what our jurors are instructed to do. On the other hand, the fact that these decisions are made by ordinary American citizens, jurors are human beings. Everyone involved in this trial is a human being, and they're going to react as we humans do. We human beings are biased. We have previous experiences that we use to predict future experiences. We have expectations about situations, about each other, about other people based on their skin color, their apparent gender, their occupation in life, and a variety of other characteristics. And there is nothing magical that happens to a human being when they become a juror.
Chauvin's attorney has said the trial is not about race. But at least outside the courtroom, we know that this case has sparked a huge conversation about racism and injustice around the country, around the world. So how much do you think that issue will actually show up inside this courtroom next week and beyond? And in what ways?
There will be discussion certainly about whether the officer in this case would have responded the same way had Mr. Floyd been a white man as opposed to a black man. There will be discussion, I presume, in the media and certainly at trial too, and maybe amongst the jurors about more generally the ways in which people are treated differently and have different experiences with the police and other institutions in our justice system based on race. And I think that there's a reason why the killing of Mr. Floyd has become more than, for many people, just one case, has become a lens through which the entire discussion of racialized forms of violence, the entire discussion of police use of force, the entire discussion of Black Lives Matter, the movement and the philosophy have come to the forefront for people. And so I certainly think those issues will be playing out in trial and in the way that we're all processing what goes on in that courtroom.
All right. Thanks to both of our experts today. And thank you for listening. We'll be following the trial to share any key happenings and, of course, the final verdict during our regular episodes, providing all the day's news in about 10 minutes every Monday through Friday. So we'll be back on Monday with your next news roundup. Until then, have a great weekend.